And now we're going to turn to the important area of dormant commerce clause. Commerce power reserved to the states. Now, let me begin by explaining what we mean when we say dormant commerce power. As you all know, it is the federal government, it is Congress, which has a plenary power to regulate interstate commerce. However, where Congress has not spoken, where Congress is silent, the states are free to regulate. This is a negatively framed doctrine. In the areas where Congress has not regulated, then the states are free to regulate. And this is referred to as the dormant commerce clause, or some professors call it the negative implications doctrine. Now, before we take a detailed look at it, let's just go over a quick summary of the rules we're going to cover. State regulation of interstate commerce is valid if two requirements are met. Number one, the state regulation must be non-discriminatory. Number one, non-discriminatory. And number two, there must be no undue burden. So those are the two tests. State regulation is valid, it's constitutional if, number one, it is non-discriminatory, and number two, there is no undue burden on interstate commerce. Now, let's take a look at each of these two elements in a little bit more detail. Let's look first at the non-discriminatory area. A state may not discriminate against interstate commerce in favor of its own local interests. That's the general principle. A state may act as a market participant, but not as a market regulator. Now, let's say that we have purposeful discrimination in a state law. Well, that clearly is going to violate the Dormant Commerce Clause. That's easy. It's so easy that if you see purposeful discrimination, you strike it down and you're probably not even going to see that on your exam. What you're likely to see is where you have this situation. We have a state law which is intended to further a legitimate objective. However, it produces a discriminatory impact. It's intended to further a legitimate interest, but instead it produces a discriminatory effect. Well, in order for such a law to be constitutional, it has to be achieved by the least restrictive, least burdensome alternative means available. Let me give you now a couple of examples from fairly important cases. First, let's use the famous garbage case, the City of Philadelphia versus New Jersey, as an example. What happened in this case was that the state of New Jersey forbade importation of out-of-state waste. The argument that New Jersey made was that its number of available dump sites in Camden, around the Camden area, was a precious natural resource. And it forbid any out-of-state garbage collectors to dump their waste in New Jersey. So this New Jersey law was putting Pennsylvania garbage collectors at a competitive disadvantage. So we had a law that was intended to further a legitimate objective, but instead it produced a discriminatory impact and effect. What did the court say? It said, New Jersey, you cannot discriminate against out-of-state rubbish in favor of local trash. In other words, the holding in the garbage case was that this New Jersey law was unconstitutional because it was not the least restrictive alternative means available. The court said, New Jersey, you could tax the out-of-state garbage. You could require a license to dump it. You could even move the dump sites elsewhere, further away from the cities. So that is an example of a law which was struck down as having a discriminatory effect. Let's look at a second similar example. This is the case of Hunt versus Washington State Apple Commission. Here we're dealing with a North Carolina law that required all apples sold in the state of North Carolina to bear a label with a grade no higher than the U.S. grade. Well, Washington State apple growers felt this was discriminatory because the U.S. grade was much lower than the Washington State grade. And so the North Carolina law was depriving Washington apple dealers of a competitive advantage. So here again, we have a discriminatory effect. And once again, the court held the North Carolina law was unconstitutional as violating the Commerce Clause. Now, let's look at one exception, one case that goes the other way that you should be aware of. The case I'm going to use an example here is Reeves v. Stake. And this is sometimes referred to as the market participant doctrine. This is the situation where the state may discriminate without violating the Dormant Commerce Clause. Under the facts of this case, the state was building a cement plant. And the money used to finance the cement plant was derived from the state's own taxpayer funds. The state used its own taxpayer funds to create the market. Then it gave hiring preferences and subsidies to local residents in favor of out-of-state persons. So it discriminated, but it was in a situation where the state used its own money to create the market. And the court said that is permissible. So remember the situation, the market participant doctrine, as an exception here where the state uses its own money to create the market, then it may favor local interests and give hiring preferences and subsidies. Okay, let's turn now to the second element of Dormant Commerce Clause, and that is the element of undue burden. The states may not unduly burden interstate commerce. Here, what the court does is it uses a balancing test. It balances the state interest in regulation against the burden on interstate commerce. Now, let me give you a couple of quick case examples to show how it works. In the South Carolina v. Barnwell case, which you may have studied in law school, there was a South Carolina law that imposed width restrictions on trucks using highways in South Carolina. The state interest here was police power, safety interest. South Carolina had very narrow roads, safety interest. Well, the burden on interstate commerce is that several truckers with larger trucks could not travel on South Carolina highways. A balancing test was used, and the South Carolina width restriction based on safety purposes, safety interests, was held to outweigh the burden on interstate commerce, and the law was upheld. Now, to go the other way, we use the Illinois case of Bibb versus Navajo Freight Lines as an example. Under those facts, the state of Illinois required that all trucks driving on Illinois highways must be equipped with contour or rounded mudguards instead of flat mudguards. The state interest here being that the rounded mudguards supposedly threw up less debris, kicked up less debris from the road. The undue burden argument was that truckers were going to have to change their mudguards just to drive from Indiana into Illinois to do business. The court said the safety benefit was marginal, and here the burden on interstate commerce won out and the law was overturned. So that is the way it works. Okay, so we've just now covered the non-discriminatory element and the no undue burden element. That is the Dormant Commerce Clause. Now, I'm going to turn now to a related area, and that is the Article 4 Privileges and Immunities Clause. Sometimes it's called the Comity Clause. Let's start with the rule itself. Under the Article 4 Privileges and Immunities Clause, it prevents one state from discriminating against citizens of another state regarding basic economic rights and activities. The Article 4 Privileges and Immunities Clause prevents one state from discriminating against citizens of another state regarding basic economic rights and activities. Give you a couple of examples. The main case in this area was South Carolina case Toomer v. Witzel. South Carolina required a license fee of $25 to be paid for any resident who wanted to obtain a commercial shrimp fishing license. Residents had to pay $25. However, let's say you lived in Georgia or any other state. If you were not a citizen of South Carolina, the same license cost you $2,500. That is an example of one state discriminating against citizens or residents of another state regarding an economic activity. That violates the Article 4 clause. Now, to go the other way, in the case of Baldwin versus Montana Fish and Game, the state of Montana charged residents $9 for a recreational hunting license. But out-of-staters had to pay $225 for this same recreational hunting license. So once again, we have discrimination. Why did the court uphold this law? What's the difference between Baldwin versus Toomer? Well, the difference here, in the Montana case, we were looking at the area of natural resources, which involved recreational as opposed to commercial interests. This was a recreational hunting license as opposed to a commercial shrimp license. So in the area of recreational licenses, then the state will more likely be able to discriminate. Let me give you one final case which has been tested on the exam. This is the case of Piper v. New Hampshire. Miss Piper lived in White River Junction, Vermont, right across the Connecticut River from New Hampshire. She was a resident of Vermont. She wanted to sit for the New Hampshire bar exam. And the state of New Hampshire said to her, sorry, you have to satisfy a 6-month residency requirement before we will let you sit for our bar. Well, the opinion was written by Justice Souter before he went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and he held that this New Hampshire law was discriminating against citizens or residents regarding a basic economic right or liberty, the right to take a bar exam, and it violated the Article 4 Privileges and Immunities Clause. Now, to bring this all into perspective, if Article 4 Privileges and Immunities is going to be a correct answer, look for economic discrimination against keywords, citizens or residents. If the discrimination is against citizens or residents, then it is a viable answer choice. Most of the time, however, I'd say 90% of the time, Article 4 Privileges and Immunities is an incorrect answer. It is a wrong answer because when you see a fact pattern dealing with economic discrimination, it is generally going to be a Commerce Clause issue. It is generally a Commerce Clause issue. But if you see the word citizen or residence, then think about the Article 4 clause. And when we use the word citizens, one note here is that neither corporations nor aliens are deemed citizens for privileges and immunities purposes. Okay, that concludes our discussion of dormant Commerce Clause.